We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And today we preview Game 3 and talk a little more about the first two games. We don't always get to every topic that I wish we could get to on the pod. In fact, we rarely do. And so today we're going to talk a little bit more about that, some adjustments we might be able to see. But Darius, just before the pod right now, we were talking about sort of that idea of having belief. And there was D'Angelo Russell yesterday made some comments like, hey, don't give up on us. We're going to win this series. I'm paraphrasing, right? But just words of confidence. And I think that it's a great blessing that the Lakers have 2 days off after that emotional blow in game two, have that first date, I think, to kind of recover. I think that's what yesterday was. And now you kind of got your bearings back. You build back toward that. So talk to me a little bit about that, and you as well, Mike, about kind of getting back onto that track.
Well, I just think that in the aftermath of losses in general, there's always a certain amount of second guessing. And I think after a particularly emotional loss like game two was, with that comes doubt. And I thought, Pete, you phrased it very well in the aftermath of game two with the pod that we did. That game feels heavier based off of
the history, like,
that it's not just one game. There's history there. And so there is a weightiness around the team right now. But D'Lo's not wrong. And there is a very favorable view of the Lakers right now, that if they look in the mirror, they can look at themselves as a team that has been in position to beat the Nuggets. Like, over the 8 quarters of this series, the Lakers could probably say we've been as good or better than Denver in 5 of them, maybe 6 of them. So there's a lot of positive takeaways there for the Lakers. But they're still down 0-2. And so, Mike, you've been around so many Lakers playoff teams, and you've been around so many teams that have been in scenarios similar to this, where they've clearly got an understanding that they have things that work against their opponent, but have also lost and now need to come back to win. And that internal battle to me of how much do we grasp at the positives and use that as an accelerant for game three, versus how much do we look at our failings and let that keep us down. And I think that's an important aspect of this from a mental standpoint. And I just love to get your insight about this just based off of your experience.
The stakes are certainly a big part of it, Darius, but ultimately, when you get into a playoff series, and I think this is especially after like game two, where you've seen basically everything the other team does, and the Nuggets, this is sort of exaggerated in the case of the Nuggets, in that it's the same team as last year, just minus a couple of guys, but they're running mostly the same stuff. Like that. So the Lakers now know what Denver does. And then the question is, can they stop it? And can they run stuff that they feel like is consistently going to work? And that, to me, has been the issue relative to what I've seen in series past. And, you know, most recent run, of course, is the 1920 season. And like the Lakers go 4-1 against Portland, 4-1 against Houston, 4-1 against Denver, and then get to the finals 4-2, where it probably could have, should have, would have been 4-1 if not for that ridiculous Butler game in game five. Like the Lakers figured out each of those series that, okay, they can't stop what we do. Like there is something about this matchup that we can expose. And sometimes it took a game one loss in the case of Portland or Houston. And then it was like, oh, nope, this is the thing. This is the thing. We've got the goods. Same thing during basically every series that I watched the Kobe, Powell, Lamar, Andrew Bynum, that I watched them play for my first two seasons, up until they get to Boston in 2010, where that was sort of a, all right, like this team's got answers too. And it just became kind of a fight of wills. And the Lakers happened to be home and they had Kobe Bryant and game seven. But I didn't feel like there was something that they could just break Boston with, and vice versa. And that's why those teams went back and forth. So this series here, this is the first time relative to those series where, and it goes back to the Western Conference Finals last year. And it's the only series that I've seen LeBron in when healthy with Anthony Davis next to him, where there wasn't just the obvious, this is what our answer is to do, and we can do it when we want. And what their best thing is, we can stop at a certain point. And I think that's the trick, Pete, about, is there something that the Lakers can watch in these two games at Denver, which were certainly much better than game one and game two last year in Denver? And yet, and they still lost. So is there something that they can watch on the film and that LeBron can sit down with Anthony Davis and talk about and say, if we play like this, you know, we can beat this team? And I think that they're a little bit closer to it, but the fact that they're now down 2-0 and it isn't totally obvious what, and I guess the thing that I would say, defensively, how are they going to contain and stop Denver's execution? That to me is the problem area, because there are some offensive answers. We went over some of them yesterday, but that to me is the difference in why I think it's harder to come up with the answer and to think that the Lakers are going to be able to win four games when it hasn't all come together yet against this Denver team in this specific matchup.
Yeah, I think if we can put aside a sec being down 0-2 and just talk about kind of the back and forth, the cards that each side has to play.
Even just the basketball. Yeah. If you take out the fact they're down 0-2, if you want, it's still is the basketball answer there?
So this is, part of what I've been excited about from these first two games. Now you have to actually win the game to move on, which is why I'm saying, just for the sake of this argument, put it aside. But the Lakers have forced Denver to play a couple of new cards in ways that last year's series, they really didn't. And so, for example, the adjustment of putting Gordon on AD was because we were flaming them over and over again, Anthony Davis in particular. And so there's a clip, Harrison trolled me very well with this, where it was during the Miami series, during those finals, and I was talking about the different cards that Spoelstra had to play and the different defensive coverages that he was trying. Remember, Bam got hurt in game one, and so game two, they played 2-3 zone almost that entire game. Bam came back later in that series. I think he missed two games in that series. But he kept trying different coverages to try to answer. And the clip where I'm saying that's what the film room does, which Harrison very cleverly cut to make it sound like I'm speaking of myself in fourth person, whatever that is, calling myself the film room. I'm not talking about myself there. I'm talking about how if you watch, it's like, okay, they did this, so then you get the chance to do that. Then they do that. And then what I was arguing was that he had kind of run out of cards to play within that deck. No, he had one more. They ran some crazy pick and roll coverage in game five, the one that they won, where it was it involved Keefe and Jimmy Butler, inside pivoting. It was really great, D. And so I was wrong about my observation within that, but you got to be, that's sort of what's so fun.
Were you wrong or was the film room wrong?
No, the film room is never wrong, Mike. The film room is never wrong. You're welcome, Harrison, for that soundbite. He's going to clip that and make it sound like I'm talking about me for the next 5 years. The film room is never wrong. So, you have to be able to take good out of losses, and you got to be able to take bad out of wins. And we engaged them in a way, D, where they had to kind of change what they do in ways where that's part of the chess match and the fun of series basketball.
It's why I love the playoffs. Game after game after game, teams that really test each other, there is a seeking out of solutions to the challenges that are presented against you, and there is a seeking out of new ways to dig at the weaknesses of the opponent. And it's why the playoffs are a war of attrition. It's just like, I have fewer weaknesses than you do to exploit. We're Lakers fans, obviously. Well, me and Pete are. Mike is an employee.
I'm an independent journalist whose life is better when the Lakers do well.
Thank you. Thank you.
We not the first time that Mike has summarized this. No.
Even from my fan hat, it's clear to see that the Lakers have more weaknesses to poke at than the Nuggets do. And the key to beating the Nuggets then is to press your advantages more than the other team is able to press on yours, even though you have more of them to press on. I think the Lakers have done that in ways that allow them to get leads and allow them to look like the superior team for extensive stretches of both games one and two. Let's go to break here, because on the other side, I do want to dig into some stuff on both sides of the ball that we've seen, and also areas where the team still is falling a little bit short. And if they can get more production from a couple of different places, it can change their trajectory in this series, and it could help being at home.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great, thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goodbye. Dr. Goodbye is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Goodbye can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Goodbye works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Goodbye, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So, Pete, before we were recording, you had brought up a couple of players offensively from a bench perspective that we haven't really gotten into. You were saying, like, we can't hit everything. And one of the areas we have not hit is really the production of the bench. On the positive side, I think Taurean Prince has been, like, a very good player. And while he's made a couple of mistakes here or there, I think overall he's been a positive player in this series and has really helped. There's a couple of other guards, though, that are still in the rotation that are playing, and their shifts are limited to a certain extent, but they do not resemble the versions of that they've been in previous parts of their career. So can you talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing from both Gabe Vincent and from Spencer Dinwiddie, particularly on the offensive side of the ball?
It's crazy to me to think that, so Gabe Vincent was the main guard ball handler on a finals run last year. He was the main guy they gave the ball to, which if you watch this Lakers team, it's hard to envision, right? Because there are so many other guys that have that job before he does. And with both guys, I think the main bit of context is they're the limited amount that they've been able to play. And even more so, because Dinwiddie's been here a little bit longer, is that he did not have training camp. He was joining something that was already semi-established. And so he was, they're both asked to be more of 3-and-D wings or D and three type of guards than on ball type of guys in this scenario. And so I, from Spencer's standpoint, for example, we came out and as we were trying to, we came out in the second quarter, right as AD was starting to go on his run out of a timeout, and we ran a dive, skip, and seal style of double drag screen, which means AD's going to set the screen and then roll to the basket. Dinwiddie's going to be the second screener and then pop out to the right side. Well, I think it was D'Lo driving to his left, to the left side. And so what happens there is D'Lo has the ball on the left side of the court, and the idea of the play is to skip it over to Spencer. And then Spencer has a good AD gets a post seal because of the ball reversal. And that's why you call it the dive, skip, and seal. You dive, you skip the ball. And because the ball is now on the other side of the court, the big man has an inside seal. And we got a bucket off of that. But what struck me while watching that, and this is indicative of like so many of the plays that he's involved in, when he caught the pass, Denver was so far off of him. Like, they don't consider him a threat whatsoever from the perspective of like, yeah, this guy's going to shoot the ball. That, and Spencer didn't even react to that. Now, we made a good pass and we scored off of it, right? It's not something that particular play, it was that. But it was more that like, he's catching the ball and not even looking to attack or to shoot or to score. The one time he did, he airballed the layup, right? And so both of those guys, I think, have some element of like rhythm player on offense, which is bad when your usage goes down as far as it is now. But at the end of the day, D, we got to be able to get some points out of them. And so, Mike, this is something that I think falls into some of the late third quarter struggles that they had, even the beginning of the fourth, in terms of being able to score. Everybody out there has got to be a bit of a threat. And so I think that the role change for both of those guys is probably part of an explainer for that. But the lack of bench production is really hurting.
So both of these things are true, right? They are both capable players of doing other things they've shown before, but their role on this team, because of what the other personnel is, has them in a certain mindset and a certain level of focus. And one of the things that I do before games, and it depends sometimes if it's on the road, and it depends if we have somebody else from the studio there, but I'll interview the players. And so I've talked to Spencer a bunch. I've talked to Vincent a bunch before these games, and I'll ask sort of, hey, what's a key for you? What's something you're thinking about for the opponent? And my summation of having to have spoken to these guys in this context is like, they're in there thinking about what can they do to impact the game defensively? What can they do to help the Lakers kind of run the rest of their stuff, which is almost always through LeBron or AD or Russell or Reeves? Like, those are, or sometimes even Rui. So when they're coming into the game, they're not being featured in certain ways. There aren't necessarily plays being called. They're not thinking about a certain attack mindset. And so that to me goes back to like, Vincent didn't play almost the whole season because he was injured, and he came back. And all of these other things, especially on the offensive end, the Lakers had gotten to be pretty good at. What they didn't have was a ball pressure defensive guard. Here's Vincent. You come in and do that. And then when Dinwiddie came back, it was a little bit different as well, as they just didn't have the defense almost at all, because he came back a little earlier. Vanderbilt was still out. So it was like, all right, well, we don't necessarily need the scoring that you can do, but can you lean in more to the defense? And he did. Remember, he blocked Damian Lillard to win that game. Like, he has been better, I think, on defense than some people realize. So the challenge then is with all of the rest of the Lakers season in context and needing what they needed at the various times, well, now what do they need in this matchup, in this series? And I still think it's like they need another big athletic big, or like super big wing to come in. They don't need necessarily more offensive usage in most of these spots. although it could help, I guess. So I'm struggling to find how the answers here, other than they come home, one of the role players starts to go off, has a good game, like we've seen it in other series throughout this last couple of days of playoff games, where somebody could just get hot and then ride that heater. And I just the way that the Lakers are playing, though, and how much LeBron, AD, Austin, D'Lo, Rui, like those guys all want a certain level of touches and have been delivering upon that. So how do you then try to account for Vincent and Dinwiddie on top of the rest of that mix?
I'm of the mind, Mike, that what the team actually needs right now is someone who could score. Not that the defense stuff needs to go away. They need threats. They put Jokic on Rui because Rui was the guy who was the most natural matchup for Jokic, and Rui was 1-for-7. Earlier in the game, though, do you know who they had Jokic defending for a handful of possessions?
I do. It's Gabe Vincent.
They had Jokic on Gabe Vincent. Gabe was standing in the corner, and Jokic was just like, oh, I know where you're going to be. You're going to be here the entire time. And even if the ball goes to you, you're not going to really be an offensive threat. What I think the Lakers actually need, the team who scored 99 points in the last game, is for the guys who have actually proven in their career that they could score a little bit, for them to take the blinders off a little bit and open up their worldview a little bit more, that when the offensive possession is there for them, they take it. So, Pete, you mentioned Spencer airballed a layup. In my first watching of that, I was just like, oh man, Spencer, like, what are you doing attacking there? Like, there was something else. But then when I watched it back, I was just like, oh no, he made the right choice.
He just whipped the layup.
The difference between Spencer attacking the basket there and what KCP did 5 possessions later, where he just went in and was just like, I'm dunking the damn ball. And either I'm going to get a dunk right here or I'm going to get fouled. The ball goes to Spencer in the corner or it goes to Gabe in the corner. I want them to be a little bit more aggressive. One thing that I think happens in playoff series, and I've seen it happen particularly on the LeBron-led Lakers teams, is that there is an appropriate at times, but sometimes overemphasis on the value of every possession. And there are times where I think the role players get caught up in the idea of these possessions are so valuable that they can really only go to one or two places. And it's like, we got to get...
So they become passive?
Yes.
Is that sort of what you're saying? Yeah.
Dinwiddie is too good of an offensive player, Mike. And Gabe, I think, is too good of an offensive player. And honestly, I'm not looking for them to shot hunt, but I am looking for them to be like, when the ball is there, make it or take it and make it. Like the 7, remember Gabe? He had like 8 points in that Pelicans game where he hit a couple of corner threes and then he got that ball in semi-transition from LeBron on a pretty good like sort of diagonal pass, and he got the and one layup. It's like plays like that where you're putting yourself in position to be a threat offensively. The Lakers guards, these bench guards, I think need to do more of that. They need to basically look at Prince and be like, oh, this dude's playing like this. We can play like that too, because I actually think they're more talented offensive players than Torian Prince. But Prince is bringing the right mentality as a bench player and someone who can score to these games. And I'd like to see Spencer and Gabe pick it up a little bit in that regard.
I want to try to make a broader point, and then Pete, maybe you can zero it back in on this, but I just think that it's very difficult to have multiple different players who, in acknowledging that these guys have a lot of offensive talent, into that type of mindset.
Totally agree.
When they catch the ball and they're looking up and they see LeBron and AD on the court, or D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves, and those guys are all like, ball.
Yeah.
You know, like, give me the ball. Like, AD wanted the ball the whole game. AD was mad, and he should have been, that he didn't get it late. LeBron wants the ball every possession. D'Lo wanted to attack. Austin is more than ready to attack in the screen roll setting. So these guys are watching that, and then they're on the bench and they're like, but you want me to be aggressive too? And then if I do screw up, how many eyeballs am I going to get on me? Not just from my teammates, but just from sort of the world. Like, this is going back to the broader point that I wanted to make, like the 2019-20 team. That team did not have a ton of offensive individual creation guys behind LeBron and AD. It had, you know, Kuz could do a little bit here and there, but those guys are mostly like LeBron, AD, you guys break everything down. We will finish. We will get shots off. We will. But there was more balance in terms of we'll defend, we'll have length. And like there wasn't necessarily even a sixth man score. And I just think that it's very difficult to ask guys to still to want to be aggressive, even when it's there in this kind of a framework.
So I agree with what you're saying, Mike. And I think it is a mindset thing. And I do think the idea of too many eyeballs on you and that idea of like, well, if I'm going to shoot it, I better make it. I think that that's a real thing. But I remember all goes to Danny Green or KCP and they're open. They're letting it fly. How many actions were they running for Avery Bradley?
Yeah, catch and shoot is that's what those guys were there for. That was what they did season.
That's the players like that they were too.
Danny Green and KCP caught and shot.
That's an element of Gabe Vincent and Spencer Dinwiddie's game, but they've always been on ball guys. I think to Mike's point, it's like you don't need eight guys that can run a ball screen necessarily, and that's part of the and like they don't Danny Green and KCP, they're natural rhythm shooters out of the situations that we were putting them in. They also played all 82 or not all 82, but they played the whole season in ways that like catching a rhythm in Gabe's circumstance, missing freaking 65 games, however many he missed, showing up at the buyout with Dinwiddie. I think that factors into this too. Same with Prince, right? I think that's probably a distinguishing factor with him. He's been here all year. He's gotten the rhythm, knows where his shots come from, all that.
This stuff is totally fair. I'm just making the point that if you're going to beat a team that has the advantages that Denver has, one of the things that it would be nice to get is like one of those role player games where a guy goes 4 for 5. And you know how you don't go 4 for 5, Pete? By being 0 for 1.
Yeah.
Or 0 for 0.
100% get your point. To me, the guy I would pivot to, though, less Spencer maybe and less Vincent, although those situations could certainly present themselves, is Rui. Rui is the, and he had 3 layups. Like one
he's
of them
been
was
struggling
a
though. Yeah.
And he's been struggling. So it's one thing, like Rui is, he's the guy that has been in rhythm all year. Not all year, but since he got over his injuries and certainly since he began starting, he's the guy that is getting certain shots that are open. And I think Denver has done a really good job of making, and you know, maybe not even Denver doing it. It's just Jokic's presence and all in that concern of Jokic has Rui thinking like, I used to be able to, you know, kind of just get to my spots and work and cook. Mm-hmm. And now you're asking me to defend the one guy in the league that nobody in the world can defend. And then he has been out of sorts there. But coming home, you know, maybe that's part of it for him. Like because if Hachimura is scoring and they have to devote some more resources there, then that opens things up again. Like for everybody else, it's just like what is his total output so far in the two games? I think he had 7 points in game 1. Yeah, 7 points in game 1, 3 points in game 2. So, you know, before that, he averaged 16.4 points a game in April. He averaged 17.3 points a game in March. And he's playing more minutes. He's playing 34 and a half minutes. And like part of it's just the shooting, but the Lakers absolutely have to get Hachimura's offense back, I think.
You know he's not playing well when he's Hachimura on this podcast instead of Rui. Let's take another break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about Rui and Austin on the offensive side, because I think that both guys are characters that we could get a little more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So from Rui's perspective, I think he was just going a little too fast on a lot of his shots. He had a pull up from the mid range that he missed that it was totally his shot. Same thing with several of those layups. Now, Denver has done a wonderful job of taking away Rui's baseline cuts. And Rui is a satellite player, right? He's a guy that will throw him the ball if he has a mismatch. And one of his missed layups was he did a drop step on KCP and beat him and just smoked the layup, right? When we ran that triple drag screen with Austin as the ball handler that ended up in a turnover, Rui tried a baseline cut. Austin tried to hit him, but MPJ read it and got the steal. And so the point I'm trying to make is Rui being in that satellite position, the satellite type of players can be taken out. If you decide we are not giving up that baseline cut, that's going to reduce Rui's shot attempts by 3 or 4 in an individual game. And so those kind of guys can be taken out of the equation. But Rui has been, I think, pressing to a certain degree where it's like you're getting your shots at a lower volume for sure, because of a lot of what Denver is doing, but you're getting your shots, you know, take your time to finish it. You don't have to press quite to that same degree. I think Austin on his side of things, I think we've done a remarkable job on Jamal Murray. And so part of it, like if you hold Denver to 101 points, you're in really good shape. And I think that we've defended very well in part because Austin's been part of that. So he's contributing, I think, in an important aspect of this series. But with him, like one of the struggles in the late third quarter, when AD picked up his fourth foul on that illegal screen, we're trying to run a side ball screen with Austin as the only ball handler on the floor. We've seen this over and over and over again this season. And KCP is defending him, D. KCP is the guy that's getting up into his jersey and pressuring him, and he's sort of like staggering and struggling for it. You don't actually have an advantage. That's not where you should be attacking. And I think that's a big part of the offensive collapse in a broader sense, is that both Austin and D'Lo, they're not the like 35 million level type of on-ball guards that like you put KCP on them, that's fine. They score on the best defender across from them. Like Austin, this has been a story throughout the series is like, hey, you don't, or this has been a story throughout the season is when he's out there alone as the only ball handler, he's going to draw that best defender on against a team like Denver. Same type of thing with D'Lo. We saw a possession, you know, where he threw a pass sailing out of bounds, trying to throw a lob to AD. They can't quite hit that level to that degree. And so I think that finding different places to attack, like I think it's Austin is somewhat miscast in some of the things that he's asked to do.
Yeah, this goes back to the point I was making about Dinwiddie and Gabe. After game two, Darvin spoke about the Lakers' offensive strategy and trying to put certain players into the action. We all know what they were talking about. They were talking about Jokic within the context of the pick and roll. I'd love for the Lakers to begin to focus more on who is defending the ball as the entry point rather than who is defending the screen.
It's a very ball screen centric mindset, right? Like that's one thing that we did throughout that game was really tried to attack off ball screens when you have other tools, and that's not always the answer.
Well, also too, if you want to attack off ball screens, great. Put the guy who isn't as good at getting over ball screens in the screen instead, right? It's like this, again, this was Denver's gambit of putting KCP on LeBron. You're going to continue to run ball screens, and this is our best dude at getting over the top of screens. And so what are you going to do? You're going to continue to put that guy in ball screens to attack the defender who is defending the screener? The screen and roll mostly works because you screen the guy on the ball. If you can't screen the ball, then it's like you haven't created the initial advantage enough in order to get downhill to test the guy who's defending the screener. And so one of the things that I'm looking for is Denver is starting the game with KCP mostly on D'Lo, and they are putting Murray on Austin to start the game. I would love to see Austin get ball screen chances in the earlier parts of the game where Murray is on him. If Murray is in the game, put Murray in screen actions. When it's Reggie Jackson that's in the game, put Reggie Jackson in screen actions. You talked about how, well, it's not as important to have 8 players who can run a ball screen, but in this case, it kind of is. It kind of is important that Gabe Vincent can run a ball screen. You know why? Because if they're going to defend him with Nikola Jokic, let Gabe Vincent run a damn ball screen.
My only pushback on that is Gabe Vincent hasn't run ball screens for us. So this is more of the doing new in the playoffs type of thing. Like, had he been here doing that? Absolutely. But it's just not how it's been. Same with Spencer.
Yeah, this is why I'm focusing more on Rui and Austin and guys who have done it this year and did do it last year. It's certainly in Austin's case. So Austin, one part of his game that has gone away some that was really huge at the end of last year on throughout the playoffs was getting to the free throw line. I think part of that is the whole league's, he's one of the guys in the league's emphasis on some of the contact and like getting downhill and some of the sort of like draw it and then flail. Like he got to the line a lot on those kind of plays and referees, which by the way, I kind of generally agree with, have been going away from giving that call a lot. So last year he got to the free throw line four times a game in this matchup. This year he has taken one free throw in these first two games. And so that's part of it. He's also taking about three fewer shots overall, but he's not going to get to that same level of efficiency as he got last year without the free throws. But I think there are situations where he can attack better. And then Rui, you know, Pete, what's the difference between him smoking one layup and three layups to me? And what else could be in his mind other than that all of the time that he's had to spend trying to think about Jokic and focus? I just think that he's seeing the big Serbian. That's the only thing I can come up with. But I think that changes in game three. I think he gets home. He's not going to continue to smoke layups. He's huge. He's got huge hands. Like he's going to get some things done there. And then maybe that allows him to find some rhythm back in the rest of the game offense.
And your role players and satellite players playing better at home is one of the things that happens throughout the history of the NBA playoffs.
The Lakers need their best players to be at their best. And Rui and Austin are two of their best players. To Pete's point, they have been, I think, helping in other ways. Like Rui just taking some defensive usage, even if Jokic is like kicking his butt. Like, I think it's important to absorb some of that usage.
I agree, but we can't leave him on an island, D. Like that was after AD picked up that fourth file. Like, yeah, it's, and I think to Mike's point, it's like this dude's scoring on me every time.
That's not what I'm arguing. Yeah, I'm saying that they have been contributing in other ways. I think that the primary ways that they've contributed all season, though, has been through their ability to be double-digit scorers. Like, how many times during the season did Mike point out that it's just like, this is the first time five Lakers starters have done X since Magic Johnson was on the team? And that's not going to happen in the playoffs, per se, where they all get 20 points, but they are capable. The Nuggets are going to tilt their defense in ways where there are openings for these guys. And I think Austin especially, he's a guy that's going to have the entry point to attack Denver's defense is likely going to be on Austin Reeves when all five starters are on the court. Now, that changes in the bench units. And it's sort of the same with Rui. Like, Denver's best defenders are Gordon, it's KCP, and then Jokic's ability to be around the paint. If you want to attack Michael Porter Jr., Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray are the entryways, Mike. And so I'm looking to try to optimize what Austin and Rui can do as well.
The last pod, before game two, I guess two pods ago, I was talking about Aaron Gordon, right? And just how good I think he is and et cetera. And Pete was talking about Jamal Murray. And these things are very clear. And I was just looking at Michael Porter Jr.'s game log against the Lakers. He's hit at least three threes in six straight playoff games. And the two regular season games leading up to it, he was 5 for 5 from three in March. And then in February against the Lakers, he was like something close to that. I think he hit 4 for 7 from three. So he has just destroyed the Lakers from the perimeter. And like, okay, you got to start with Jokic. Then you got to start with Murray in your defensive game plan. But some of these he's getting on ATOs. It happened twice last game where, in fact, the one that I thought was kind of an underrated big shot was out of the Lakers go up 20, I think on the Reeves three, and they come back immediate Michael Porter Jr. three to cut it to 17. Just sort of like, nope, you're not running away with the game. Still attached, you know, 17, you're not that far away. So can the Lakers do something else with him without completely screwing their defense up? In the focus on Jokic and Murray, is he not high enough on the scouting report based on the degree to which it seems so easy for him to absolutely crush the Lakers from 3-point land, especially?
I think to a large extent, Mike, he's the guy that we have to live with. There's a very long explanation for why I think that's the case.
Well, they've been dying.
Well,
They've been dying.
We gave up 101 points, though. Like, he kept them in the game for sure. I thought he was huge for them in the part before the game changed. Obviously, he hit that big shot toward the end. But just sort of in that staying attached type of idea, even prior to that one that cut it to 17, he would hit like 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 4 by that point. And sort of that shot making was a big part of it. I think that AD, I thought he got tired late, and Jokic won a couple of those battles, but I thought he did a really good job on Jokic overall. And then the question to me is, do you have LeBron on Porter or do you have LeBron on Gordon in this matchup? Because I think that's part of the fundamental thing that they're taking advantage of. If Rui is not guarding Jokic D, then Rui is likely to be on Michael Porter Jr. And he's an off-screen shooter. It's the same reason why Rui struggled to guard Klay in the series against the Warriors last year. Those are the type of guys that can run around a screen and just let it fly. And that's a real challenge for a guy like Rui. I think you can switch a bit, I think you can switch a bit from perimeter players and to help track Porter in that respect. But to me, I think he's the guy that in some ways you have to live with the way things are. And again, we made a nice defensive adjustment on from because of the way that Denver used to attack when we'd put AD on Jokic. They used to do this. They used to use Gordon very much sweeping on the baseline, where we ended up using like LeBron as low man help. That's why you got that block on Jamal Murray on that dunk, that great block, is LeBron was like, hey, tonight, this is a big game. I will be that rim protector. I will be that help defender that beats you to the spot as a low man and all of that. And so we did a good job overall on defense, D, but I do hear Mike's point that this is a fire that ideally would be put out. I just think it's going to be harder.
Well, also, too, that the Nuggets have coaching, too. And when the Lakers double Jokic, they are positioning Michael Porter Jr. so that the last rotation's to him.
Exactly.
And so some of his threes that he's getting are with a small guy running at him because the Lakers are in rotation.
Was that the first play of the game? Did he hit the first shot or was that Murray?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They specifically set that up for it in part because you can't. He's 6'10". And if you're like, that's what I'm talking about strategy wise. There's a part of me that would rather give up a layup or sure, or at least a one on one than just a wide open, because he is hitting every time and it is killing the Lakers.
He is also, too. It's just like the one game that he shot poorly earlier during the season, it didn't matter because that's a game where Jamal Murray and KCP and these other guys just go wild. It's like, it's sort of whack-a-mole to a certain extent. Like, you're going to give up an open shot somewhere or a semi-contested shot somewhere. And Denver's ability to hit those shots has been at a high enough level that it's been a difference maker. To Pete's point, though, I've been mostly happy with what the Lakers have been doing defensively. And what I'm looking for is one more guy offensively to be there for them. And the Lakers just haven't gotten that. And if it's not going to be one more guy, D'Lo, LeBron, and AD were all very good to great offensively against Denver in game 2. No one else, though, was really there for them. Austin was like 4 for 11, or whatever he was. Like, he had that big baseline jumper late, but he wasn't getting enough opportunities. Rui was 1 for 7. You either need one of those guys to pop for 16 because they're more than capable, or you need three guys to get you 10. You know what I mean? And the Lakers haven't gotten any of that. And I'm hoping that as they go home, these guys have one of those games in them, because this is the most important game of the series.
Two specific thoughts before we wrap up. Mike, on the, I totally get you on like, I'd rather not give up that shot and do something different. And what can we do? I think that at some time, there were some times where we were doubling Jokic too far away from the basket. And so that first play was an example. Jokic was posted up at like 18 feet away from the rim and AD was on him.
Yeah, that's what Denver wanted.
Exactly. And so to Darius's point, it's like you're making Austin Reeves sprint all the way from one side of the court to the opposite corner to go try to close out to 6'10 Michael Porter Jr. It's not going to work. And so I don't think we need to double him that far out. And then Darius, to your point about the offensive end, I think triple threat position is going to be super important from both Anthony Davis and LeBron in this game, which is you throw them the ball, they catch it and still have a live dribble once they're in that attack mode, rather than attacking off of a live dribble the way that you do on a pick and roll. This is something that's it's one of the, Kobe was, I would argue, the most skilled triple threat guy of all time. Kawhi, MJ, Jokic is an incredible triple threat player himself. And so that to me is, I thought we ran too many ball screens toward the end of that game and after they made that adjustment, that the problem that we're having and the reason why in this, Austin and Rui in particular, they are satellite guys in the way that we're running our offense for the most part right now. They can be guys that are on ball, but they've mostly not been over the course of this series. And those guys will struggle if you can't create an initial advantage, which is what we were struggling with once the game started to get away from us, is that we weren't getting the type of open shots that we were earlier in the game. And that, to me, is the big difference of down the stretch of them versus us. It's like, yes, they made seven straight shots. They also, and a couple of them were just amazing shots. They also had several where, like, that's a good look in rhythm, nice floater. Like, that's a good shot. Lakers were at the end of the shot clock over and over and over again, which is usually a sign that you didn't create that first advantage that you need in order to get the shot. And so I think throwing the ball into the mid post, into the low post, getting LeBron and AD both some opportunities to catch and face up, I think is going to be crucial to being good on offense on this.
The last point I would make, we've emphasized that having this additional day of rest is important for the Lakers to kind of, you know, just clear the mechanism and get some of that bad juju out of their system. I also think that it helps Denver in a sense that I've seen a lot of series happen, and a lot of times when it's the Lakers, really go up 2-0 and then you go to the other team's gym in game three and are kind of like, well, you know, we're up 2-0 and you don't quite match that other team's intensity. That's not going to happen. Like, Denver's going to come in, especially with the additional day, and they can kind of say, okay, that's in the past now. Here's game three. So I do not expect Denver to drop off at all or give the Lakers an inch. And we saw that last year as well. That's part of what their makeup is, which is impressive about Jokic, certainly leading the way in Murray. But I think that it goes both ways. And so while it was important for the Lakers, they cannot expect even a single ounce of drop off from Denver.
If and when we record tomorrow, I'd love to dive into a couple of more adjustment based stuff in advance of the game, because I do think that if the Lakers are going to win this game, it is going to be because the things that Denver showed worked in that game too. The Lakers are going to need to have answers for that stuff. And they did not show enough answers in losing the lead and ultimately losing the game. And so I'd love for us to start to dive in a little bit more as to how the Lakers are going to carry the day with LeBron and AD, because we know that that part of the game plan is not going away.
All right, we will be back tomorrow to discuss. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel for the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.